Hello, everyone. This is Sparkle On. Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth. I'm Davey Jags, and today we're sitting down with Sydney Raz, an LA-based content creator with over 5 million followers across his platforms. He's a dad, husband, life hacker, learner, and much more. What's really special about Sid's story is that he's been trying to be a content creator for 15 years. You might recognize him from YouTube, Instagram, Vine. But then in 2021, he started sharing a series of something that I didn't know until I was in my 30s. And that took off. He has built an international following, getting coverage from The Today Show Australia, The Drew Barrymore Show, Good Morning America, and much more. He's worked with brands like Toyota, Cascade, and LA Library. And now Sid is winning at life. So thank you, Sid, for joining us today on Sparkle On.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. That was an incredible intro. But, I wish I had just every time I walk into a room, just my, every time my daughter doesn't listen to me, I would just be like, do you know my accolades or any like that? That would be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she will one day. I'm sure
one day
you will win the best dad award. What originally inspired you to become a content creator?
You know, it's funny. I have been, trying to figure that out this past year as well. But I think, you know, after I've read so many like self-help books, sort of like Buy Back Your Time and, you know, The Creative Process or The Creative Way. I don't know. Name a book. Like there's even a book called like At Your Best. But there's a lot of different things that I think go into it. But I think at the end of the day, I just like it. I enjoy I just enjoy the creative process. But I also think that a big part of it was community. My sense of community online was so much greater than my community, I think, that I had in real life. Real life, but like, you know, in my general circle of like 20 people that I know day in, day out. I think that's what originally started it. Also, I think that I've always wanted to be a popular kid because I was never a popular kid. So to see all of these content creators start succeeding at a job that wasn't normal. I wasn't great in high school, so I wanted to find something that was different. I didn't want to be behind the desk forever. And, you know, to make my own way, I don't know, it just sort of seemed like I never really could just get good grades in school and get an office job and do all of that stuff. So when the internet came around and people started making content and posting videos, I just saw it as just like such a possibility that I never let it go. And then it worked out after so many years of just constantly like staying close to it, learning, and just wanting to do this forever. So I think that it really was just sort of a passion of mine that I can't really explain besides I like it. It's just, I don't know. It just is what I like, which is crazy.
Well, what was it like when your first video went viral?
I don't know. I think that, and I just realized that I should have ended that last bit with like, it's just my sparkle.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
At least you know the mission of the show.
You know, it's just being a content creator is just my sparkle.
I love that.
And I have always found that to be my biggest truth in life is that if I can do this, I'm happy. And what it was like for my first video to go viral was actually back in college. And that was in 2011, I think. And I was making these videos on the college campus where I would just pretend to be different things. I remember so clearly sitting across the table from my mom at a lunch and going, I'll just pretend to be different things on YouTube. There's so many things that I could be. because the first video I did was like, I was a blade of grass. So I sat in my lawn, in my, you know, in the crappy house that I was renting at the time. And I just was a blade of grass. I just recorded myself sitting in, I did a lot. It was so weird. But then my first big video that got viral was when I was a cat around campus. And I basically acted like a cat. Spent, you know, $40 or probably less on like ears and a nose and a tail or whatever. And I just crawled around on all fours, pretending to get pet like a cat and purring and snuggling. And then the VCU police officer of the campus came up and pet me like a cat. I looked at him and I said, hey, would you mind walking into frame, petting me where I am, and then just walking out? And he goes, yeah, sure, all right. And he did it. And then that was the first time where I got to the front page of Reddit. And I was in tears. I was so happy. I was like, holy crap, I've done it. I'm doing something. And it felt really good. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting recognized. I was a server and bartender at the time. And I started getting recognized around when anyone would come in. And that felt really cool. And then I just kept on sort of like going and going and going and making sure that I was near the process. You know, for like 5 years, I was working at FBE React. And that was like sort of like my trade school. I've always considered it like that. Mm-hmm. And then in 2021, when Travel Pillows Go In Front, my life hack, went viral, that was really the first time since 2011 where I was like, oh, don't let this go.
Mm.
And keep going, hold on to that, and it'll work.
Right.
And I think that I had already been doing these life hack videos for about a month, like three times a day, just information and life hack videos. And I saw the interest and the engagement and everything. So that was sort of like my understanding after so long of being in the space. Like that was the most, I think, important moment where I caught the lightning in a bottle and just kept going. So that's pretty much how it all happened.
I love that visual of catching the lightning in the bottle and not letting it go. And I think as creative people, we battle this external perspective of someone on campus might have thought, you know, why is this guy going around pretending to be a cat? Like, why is this important? And I know that like I've experienced this in the last few months is like I've tapped into this like inner teenage girlhood where I'm like obsessed with like vampires and werewolves and witches again. And I'm like going around like reading witch history, which is honestly really just society hating women, but I digress.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, so how in those moments when so many people and even the internet, you know, you're trying and failing, how do you stay relentless in those moments where you know it's something, but you can't explain it?
Wow. I don't think I've been asked that before. That's an incredible question. How do I just believed it so hard.
Mm-hmm.
It is really a sparkle. It's really just like if you're thinking about it from like a visual perspective,
mm-hmm.
It's just, you can't stop looking at the sparkle. Right? Like you can't, it's always there. It's always like shining at you and irritating you in some way.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
it's always in your field of vision. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is so abundantly clear to me that I had to keep focusing on it.
Mm-hmm.
That even with you know, the ups and downs of the creative process, you know, my friends telling me to stop recording all the time and there's no reason to always post a video day in, day out, or if it's, you know, not necessarily making or posting videos for a consistent amount of time over you know, a few years, but always trying to reignite that huge and you know, industrial size flame throughout those years with that like sparkle, right? Like that, it's just an insane thing to always pay attention to because I can't not pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just knew it as a truth for so long that even with the people telling me that I don't need to record videos all the time, or that I'm just annoying everyone around me, or you know, everything like that, it just was and is my truth.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know. I think that I just like, even when I'm feeling down, I'm like, I'm still a content creator. I'm still an influencer. Like I'm a YouTuber. Like that's just who I am. And I can't really explain besides the way I just did why it was inevitable and continues to be, even if, you know, I have low points. Man, yeah, I'm inspiring myself right now.
I mean, that's the purpose of this show is to inspire yourself and the listeners around you. And I think, you know, why your content is inspiring is, especially when I was a competitive runner, you know, I had a really great coach. And, you know, he always said it's the little things that lead to success. And your content really displays that, right? These little things of life that we all get frustrated about, right? And yeah. We look towards community. We look towards YouTube to figure out how. We look towards parents. I literally called my dad yesterday and said, "Dad, when I'm home for the holidays, you need to reteach me how to change a flat, how to do an oil change, and just basic car things." I was like, I'm still going to go pay someone to do it, but like I have AAA, but I want to know how. And I want to know how because it empowers me, right? And I think like that's what I see when I watch your content is you're helping people eliminate the frustration, right? Because it is the little things that lead to this you know, bigger pressure. How did you get the idea to do these life hacks? Time, the audio cut.
Sorry, it was me. Sorry.
Okay, no worries. How did you get the idea to do these life hacks?
I think that what you were saying, like the important thing is to like just know them. But I think that so many of these things that we learn are forgotten very easily. So for me, I come from a traumatic background. So my brain doesn't really hold on to things as much as other people.
Mm.
Or if they do hold on to those like little learnings, then I just congratulate them, but my brain just isn't able to.
Mm.
So in 2020, obviously we were all stuck inside forever, but then I started realizing that like TikTok especially was sort of a new place for information, and that's at the core of everything what the internet is, right? It's just information.
Right.
So for me in 2021, I posted something like, you know, something about millennials. And then I was like, oh, I'm in my 30s. Like, that's cool. I wonder if anyone else like feels like they're in their 30s and doesn't know anything.
Mm.
And I started posting the things I didn't know, right? And it was like a text conversation between my older sister and I. And then I just kept on posting it. I was like, I really feel like this is something, because like a white dude in his 30s really should be like, should know more than this, right? Like I should know what a horsepower is, but I don't. And I wonder if anyone else doesn't. And That it was true. No one else did. So it was just like those little things that, like, you know, my PTSD brain just wanted to know those things, and I just sort of wanted to prove that I wasn't alone. And it worked, and I was so lucky to find that moment that I guess resonated with so many other people. But I did know sort of like the strategy around it, and I did know the consistent branding around it. And that was, again, because of my trade school at React, and just sort of learning and watching all of my other friends get famous and then succeed on the internet. I think that it was just sort of one of those things that I could do consistently and easily, and that I wasn't afraid of it. I think that's a big part of it. Like, I wasn't afraid of the comments or the people in my real life saying, how did you not know how to use a can opener? And I was like, I don't know. I just didn't know how.
My can opener broke last night.
Yeah.
I had to improvise my recipe. Yeah, it forced me to get creative with my cooking. It worked out.
I'm so sorry. that sucks. But yeah, so I think that was just sort of it, right? It was just sort of like, I don't know. I was sick of learning from other people, and I wanted to try these things out myself. And it was just, yeah, it was that sparkle that I just saw. And I was like, I'm doing that. That's what I'm going to do.
I do love how the creative process is so tied with the learning process. It's like, you know, I think now more than ever, it's really important, no matter what age, is to be, you know, a lifelong student. But then what I really found fascinating about your career trajectory. So for the people listening, Sid and I met at a Swing Left event here in Hollywood. And we started really talking about the reproductive rights in the United States during this time, especially with the overturn of Roe versus Wade. And you share your family story online, especially with this big digital presence. You've been able to garner a really impactful and pivotal political conversations in your community. What is it like as someone with this audience to create an impact online? And then how do you believe in the creator economy content creators should responsibly, you know, deliver information in this realm of work?
Yeah, so my family, my wife, my daughter, and I, we had to go through a later term abortion than we would have ever expected. So we lost our 24-week-old in utero daughter, Delfina, due to holoprosencephaly, which is basically the baby wasn't growing a brain. And I think that, especially, you know, with the results of the election, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, I think that it's important for creators to lean into their personal experiences and make people feel less alone in these times where, especially in more ostracized communities, that you are not alone for wanting care and needing care. And I think that a lot of creators, myself included, tend to stray away from political issues because it's, quote, not their place or whatever. But like, sometimes it needs to be said so that your audience knows who you are, so that you garner the audience you want, not necessarily the audience you first find, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
And I think that was one of the pivotal things for me. I was just like, you know what? I think I'm just done holding my tongue in a lot of ways. Because if you, I said this on the panel, but if you only make content for what seems to be algorithmically working, that algorithm probably will skew a little bit racist and sexist and just douchey. And I don't want that audience. I want my audience to reflect the people that I would want to be friends with.
Right.
More than what the algorithm suggests I should be making towards. And I think that out of over 7-8 billion people in the world, I'm sure that there's a lot of people that agree with me. So I think that's sort of like, you know, if you look at content creators that I feel have been the most successful, Drew Ruffalo is a big one, right? And she has just never stopped speaking her mind. And I think that it garners a lot of just pure assholes that come in her comments. But guess what? Then she just slaps back, and it's incredible to see. And she's crushing it. She's an incredible person, and her unit around her is incredible. So I think that that's sort of like the need for people. And I think creating that stronger community is just, it's just more important to me now.
I mean, we're even seeing it beyond content creators. Like Chapel Roan is always speaking her mind and really calling out fandom culture. And I think in a way it is garnering more influence. And honestly, just healthy conversations around fandom culture. And I guess what my question to you is, like we talked about in the beginning, of like speaking your truth is a form of expression. It's a form of the creative process that has led you to the success that you have now. But how, because it's also your full-time career, how do you maintain that boundary of protecting your mental health with, you know, at the end of the day, some of your community is strangers, right? So how do you practice that balance of speaking your truth and, you know, protecting your family?
You know, I think that this video that I put out, it was the first time where over this past weekend, we were at an airport, and it was the first time where my wife got recognized too. And my own mental health sort of, I guess, how do I put this? My own mental health reflects sort of how much of myself I put on the internet. So usually I don't like showcase my daughter or showcase my wife. I tend to, the way that I really protected it in the beginning was by just making content quickly and not having anyone else really in it. Because if there's one thing I learned from vlogging every day in 2011, it was nobody else really wants to be in the content. It's my choice to be in the content, not anyone else's.
Got it.
And so with this new video that I posted, though, I had to also try to help and protect my wife from comments or going down rabbit holes of just like, not hate necessarily, but rude remarks. I don't, it's not like, it wasn't as bad as you think, but I think that's also because the focus was on the whole family unit, not just on, I don't really know why, but I think, I don't know, I just sort of have over the years been able to learn how many comments there can be and how little a lot of them matter, if that makes any sense. So I think that now, you know, leaning more into my family and doing all this stuff, it's still me at the end of the day, right? It's still my face. And I think that I have been to a lot of therapy over the past 10 years or so. So that's been really helpful to learn that like this too shall pass. I've learned that if 4 million people see a video and let's say 10,000 people comment, the likelihood of me seeing a mean comment is actually pretty low, especially if I sort of just like don't pay attention to the con. Like, I'm not sitting there reading every comment anymore. I'm just not. And I think that's super helpful. But also just like knowing that my content and my job is my choice, and I want every part of it. So I have had to learn sort of to make sure not to feel like I'm wasting any time or pay attention to myself if I'm burnt out. And I really, really burnt out this past year in a lot of ways. But I use that to like find a producer, find a strategist, right? Like that's sort of protecting my own mental health is also making sure that my systems and workflows change so that I can provide all of the time I want for my daughter, all of the time I want for my wife, while also still putting out 5 videos a week, right? Like on two platforms. So, yeah, it's one thing that I don't like about a lot of influencers and content creators is this sense of like, oh, just be yourself, take time. Make sure to listen to burnout, like listen to your body and everything. And it is so hard. Like, it's not, it's like anytime you're at a conference, I even said it at a conference. They were like, hey, how do you protect, how do you protect yourself from burnout? And I was like, go to therapy. I'm like, that is the shittiest answer ever. That is so fucking stupid. I'm sorry for cursing. But it's just like, that's not an answer. That's not actually an answer. That's like a, it's also just like a very what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I don't know. It's a very affluent answer. Go to therapy. Learn, read, that sort of thing. Because it does take a lot of work and it does take a lot of understanding of self to like actually listen to your body and but also just like learn the processes that you need to put in place so that you can keep going, right? Like it's a marathon, not a race. And a lot of marathon runners come in last, but they're still marathon runners. And I think that that's sort of a mentality too of like making sure that you're always in the race or you're always in the running, even if you're dead last. I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I was actually just the episode that just released with Jimmy Spencer, mental health advocate. We talked about how also at some periods of your life, depending on your job, depending on even the state of the world, self-care looks different. Like at one point in my life, therapy was that care. Now it's making it a priority to, jump in the ocean or something, to like jump in the cold water and bring down my anxiety. And therapy doesn't necessarily work. And it varies even from day to day, hour to hour. And I think that's what's interesting is like in some ways, in the creator economy, there's so many resources, which I love. But it also takes an awareness for each individual to know what makes them feel better and make those choices, which I think is what your why your content's so interesting is because you have such a diverse way of, teaching these hacks for different things. I kind of wanted to jump to, you've talking about your daughter, your role as a husband. How has becoming a dad inspired some of your latest content, and what is that process to developing new ideas?
Another just banger of a question. I think that transforming the content is just as hard as transforming yourself, because so much of what I do and so much of what we do as creators in the creator economy is like project self-image, right? So I had a really hard time figuring out what to make, right? Like everyone goes, here's something I wish I knew before I was a dad. That's the first thing that people say is like, oh, you're a dad, so here's something I wish I knew before I was a dad. But the structure of that doesn't make any sense. Because if you say, here's something I wish I knew before I was a dad, the immediate first comment that you get is, why would I need to know this if I wasn't a dad?
Right.
So it took me, honestly, my entire fatherhood career, which is over 2 years now, to figure out what the difference is between here's something I wish I knew before I was in my 30s, and here's something I wish I knew before I was a dad, which is here's something I wish I knew when I was a new dad, right? And that is here's something I wish I knew when I was a new mom, or here's something I wish I knew as a first-time mom, right? First-time mom also doesn't really make sense for me. So it's like, and like if you think like dad content, you're not thinking necessarily the content that I've been making, but because dad content is usually like you said, right? Like how to change a tire, taxes, which I don't know shit about taxes. What do you like? I like ask my wife because like she says I have money, and I'm like, all right, cool, that's good to know. Like truly, like I don't like cool, you know, like I'm making money, I'm making funny content on the internet, and she's saying we're okay, and that's good. That's taxes to me. And so I think that like to make that shift, it is sort of again just like that marathon, right? It's like, how do I tap into the new content? Also, how does my own algorithm reflect my life? So like when I'm on the internet or when I'm consuming content, I see a trend shift that I could use in order to make new content. So that's where, okay, how do you take things I wish I knew, or how do you take things someone told me as a first-time mom and, you know, become inspired by that to create content for myself to promote to a new audience, my current audience, and sort of an audience that I want, right? And so it is again just sort of like a test, fail, test, fail, test, fail, test, fail, burnout, fail, burnout again, test, you know, like find an assistant, that assistant, and the producer that you first hired, and the editor that you first hired, and they all cost too much, but are they all worthy? Are they all like all of these things, and sort of coalesce into like kind of where I am right now, which is like an okay spot in that creative process of like, here's something I wish I knew as a new dad, or you know, here's something I wish I knew before I was in my 30s, or here's something I wish I knew when my wife was pregnant, or you know, that it's just sort of like constantly testing, adding an adverb, adding an adjective, trying to figure out the script, trying to figure out the pacing of it, who are my personas. I mean, there's a lot that kind of goes into it. But yeah, it really truly was sort of like here, I even said, here's something I wish I knew as a new dad. And the reason I mention it is because the first comment I saw was, why would I need to know this if I wasn't a dad? And it just, I was like, you're absolutely right. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense. I shouldn't be saying this on the internet. Like, so, yeah, it's just a self-reflective act and a test and fail, test and fail. And again, it's just that sparkle, right? Like, I know this is something. I know that I'm doing this. Why can't I stop focusing on it? I'm a dad now. I'm a husband. I'm, you know, so it's just that. It's like, and also choosing the type of content that you want to make. Like, I could make Amazon life hack videos where I buy weird stuff online and then do a 5-minute craft about it, but I just for some reason don't want to. So like that's also a hurdle, is like, why not just do the thing that everyone's doing? Like that's the thing. Like do that thing. And I'm just like, no, sorry. So that's also part of the huge creative process.
I mean, you're kind of a spokesperson for when they say you'll never work a day in your life if you love what you do. But yet you are still talking about some serious frustrations that, despite content creation being your passion, I'm sure there's days where it's like, this is still what pays my bills. And I guess I'm wondering, like, how do you've mentioned that you've changed workflow, which I think is super important. But how do you make sure you're going back to that love of the craft? And then I guess when you have brought in these collaborators, what have you learned from doing so?
Well, I think that a lot of those books that I read this past year helped me realize that I need to not only like get off my phone, but focus on working on the same thing on my desktop. So that was a big part of it, right? Because my screen time was like 6 hours, and I was too much screen time. So I learned also that I really enjoyed certain aspects of the job, which was editing. And that's when I said, okay, well, editing on my phone is fast, but I can really only do a certain amount of things. And I can do it in bulk on my desktop way easier, in my opinion, right? And I really enjoy editing. So going back to like what was that initial sparkle? When I was in high school, I was on the morning announcements. You never could have guessed. And I was an anchor. You never could have guessed. But I really enjoyed editing the news. I really enjoyed editing the content. And so now, after a few years, it's like, well, what do you really like doing? And producing is great, but man, I have been producing 1 to 3 videos a day for like 3 years. And I was burnt out, and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I hired a producer, or I looked for a producer, and I went through a lot of different interviews, and then I found someone that could help me produce this day in, day out content, and I could just edit the videos, and it's great, right? But before that, I thought, okay, I still want to be a YouTuber. Let's lean into YouTube. My Instagram's fine. So I hired a YouTube producer and I hired a YouTube editor, but that didn't spark as much joy in me that I wanted to see from it. So it fizzled out. I was going live every week. I was reacting to life hacks. I was doing the thing. But my Instagram and my TikTok suffered. Because I was posting ghosting. And I wasn't replying to comments, and I wasn't really paying attention to it. I wasn't watering that garden, right? And that was actually like this time last year. So then I said, okay, not going to do that. It's not working out. Okay, I need an assistant. The assistant was like, all right, you know what I need? I need someone to like just take like emails off my plate and scheduling off my plate, and I just need to like focus on the production and all that stuff that I want to do. And that didn't work. So I was like, this doesn't make sense. Like, I thought you get to a certain level, you get an assistant, they help you succeed. And that's what assistants do. That's what the whole point of buy back your time is. Buy back your time is literally find someone to do the work, the assistant, wherever they are in the world to do the thing. And I was like, that just doesn't make sense to me because I tried that. But it's really find the thing that, and it's hard. Again, it takes a lot of self-reflection, a lot of failure, a lot of, I mean, that's the thing that like these books and these creators and all of these people really don't get into is like the time and the effort and the anger that you feel not figuring it out until you figure it out. It is really not a fun process.
Isn't it interesting how anger and passion kind of go hand in hand?
Yeah, it's just like, like, why aren't you working? And oh man, yeah, anger and passion really do go hand in hand. Ugh. So yeah, so just to kind of wrap that point up, it was like figuring out what my passion was, what I really liked, finding the thing that was the most annoying, which was day in, day out ideating, and finding also what I needed from a strategy perspective, which is what I really saw at React when I was there, was like a person paying attention to the data, letting you know how you're doing every couple weeks really makes sense and helps you kind of steer the ship in the right direction. So that was always something I was always looking for. And yeah, just sort of kept on following that sparkle, right? And I'm like, ah, I know this is right. I know this is right. I know this is right. And then I finally got it. And yeah, it's just, it was definitely a process. I think I answered your question. Did I answer your question?
Well, after this year, where did you see, like you kept talking about the image of watering that garden. Where did you really see, you know, the bell curve kind of come to fruition of like, was it on TikTok? Was it on Instagram? Like what felt right? And what strategy executed well, or are you still figuring it out?
I think we're still figuring it out, right? Like we're in the testing phase right now. Mm-hmm. We're working on different personas, you know, marketing personas, making sure that we have a strategy to react to those personas and create for those personas correctly. And we're still in the phase where it's like, I will say that I was looking at some stats today and it was like straight line, straight line, straight line, straight line, straight line, boom, up, right? And that is just because I started working with people that I like working with. I started paying attention to the things that I like doing and content is being produced and being put out. And even if it's up and down, up and down, up and down, the static line, the stagnant feeling is not there in the graphs anymore. And I feel like that is huge for me. So even if we are still testing content formats, still figuring out what the overall strategy is for 2025, 2026, knowing that I have content being produced now feels great. Knowing that I'm scheduled out till next Tuesday feels great. Mm-hmm. And it's a refreshing feeling to like, go to Boston this past weekend, content still gets put up, content still gets out there, and I have someone else figuring it out for me.
Yeah.
And bouncing ideas off of them. So I think that that sparkle is shining a little bit brighter now, and I'm very excited for what the future has to offer.
I mean, you have support, which is like what, at the end of the day, what we all need. And I guess it's also something you said too that really resonated with me was that you just started working with people that you like. And it's so funny because it's like, it's almost like you have to go off of this gut feeling. Like you've worked with major brands, right?
Yeah.
And it was probably quote unquote really good for business, but like, was it good for business in the long run? I don't know. That's something that you would have to, you know, look on the insights for, but like even today I was like, you know, I'm working on producing this documentary and I know some sort of like high profile influence would really make the project more attractive to potential donors and in the market. But then something in my gut said, you know, you don't need this person if it doesn't work out. And then it was really interesting because I'm driving on the way to the studio here and I'm talking to a psychic out of the UK that came recommended to a friend. And she said, are you looking on big collaborations with someone? And I said, well, yeah, you know, possibly, you know, I don't think you need to. I think that you're too early on where you need to focus on yourself and you need to focus on people that you're doing them a favor rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like what you said in the beginning of this episode. It was like this weird belief in you you have in yourself, but then it's also like this deep insecurity too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And so how do, like, okay, you have these brand, probably these brands approaching you all the time. What, mm-hmm. was it a book that you read this year? Was it a mistake that you came across that actually made you realize I'm only going to work with people I like, I'm only going to take this deal that makes sense? Like, how do you speak your truth and stay true to yourself while also, I mean, I guess putting a roof over your head?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, working with people you like is a big part of it, but working with people you like for the right reasons is another aspect of it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So like I enjoyed the people I was working with before, but it wasn't really the right thing I needed.
Mm.
Also I found, I'll really just say this. I don't like working with men. I really don't.
That's going in a clip.
I really do not like working with men. And there's just something about it that's just not my vibe.
Can you elaborate on that more?
Women are nicer.
Mm.
They're friend, like they're just better people. I think that there's a sternness and I think, in my experience, women are better at planning more long-term than men are. Like, men are very good at ingesting information that you're giving them at the moment and then making a decision. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're good at ingesting information and then investing in the future.
Why do you think that is?
'Cause men suck. No. I don't know. I think it's like something where, I mean, me, I'm a very good example of this. Like if you, I think that one of the biggest things that men and women have to struggle with, interpersonally is like that, women talking and just riffing and then men always needing to like solve the problem. I'm a huge, like I'm very bad at that. Right. Like if my wife is just like talking to me, and she tells me something and it sounds like there's a problem, I want to solve it. And that is not what she needs at the time. And it is very difficult to get over that habit.
That is so universal. Like, I can't tell you how many times I want to shake my boyfriend.
Yeah. Just like, stop. I'm just talking to you.
Yeah.
But so for me, I think that I have always trusted the advice and opinion of women for the future rather than the opinion of men in the now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's why I like working with women more. And I also just think like, it's just a little bit more fun to work with women because like they're happy sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like if you're in a meeting with four dudes, it's probably going to be a bummer of a meeting. But if you're in a meeting with like mostly women and they're just like having a good time and like talking, even if just talking about the aspect at hand, there's just like a little bit more fun, and it just makes it easier to sit in that meeting and ingest and just sort of like, instead of walking out of a room like, why was everyone so fucking pissed? It's like, why was everyone so fucking pissed? But that was kind of funny, that one moment, right? Like, it's just that kind of like uplifting spirit that I don't think that I have experienced from working with men as much as working with women. And I think that's why I just enjoy that aspect of it. Yeah.
Do you think, men get in their own way of, you know, creating projects that come to fruition in the long term?
I mean, I think that's a giant question. I think that men do get in their own way. I think that, do I think men get in their own way for projects? I don't know. I mean, it depends. I would say it depends on the project, but I do think that overall, when a man thinks something should be a certain way and they don't want to hear about it from anyone else, that really gets in their way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wait, but I also have an opinion. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying I also have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that there's just sort of like a lot of like recoiling or like self-doubt or it's just sort of like defensive actions that go in the way of making something actually happen, that I think just I feel like tend to happen with men a lot. So I think that stops people. I think that stops projects from happening. And then if a project is happening and it just doesn't make sense, God, it's so annoying. It's so annoying to be in that room with a bunch of dudes and you're like, you know, this doesn't make sense, right? And they're like, well, we're going to do it anyway. It's like, oh, God, why? I think those type of projects really get in their way. Like, you don't need to react like that. Just let's try again. I think that was the other thing, is like one thing I really learned from my time at React and FBE was just sort of like that reaction, that overt reaction does not need to be there. And I think that was something with like working with a bunch of white dudes that I was just like, nah, I'm good. I'm okay. I'm all right without that.
Well, it sounds like you have harnessed a craft that really is grounded in truth, expression, and relentlessness, which is all qualities of what a Sparkle King is about. Are there any fun things or projects that you are rolling out for the new year that you want to share with the audience?
Well, I do know that I want the audience to know that I have a book out that's a great stocking stuffer. It's called Things I Wish I Knew Before I Was in My 30s, Life Hacks, Tips, and Tricks. If you just look up Sydney Raz book, you'll find it on all of the book places. And I think that 2025 is just going to be a year of continuing to make good content, have fun on the internet, and go to more conventions. So if you see a convention that you're thinking like, hey, I wonder if Sydney Raz is going to be there, look it up. And I'm going to Dubai.
Love that.
In January. And then hopefully VidCon. And then hopefully just, you know, continuing to figure out who I am. That's really the big thing, I think, of 2025. Like, what's this new content, you know?
Well, listeners, you definitely want to see Sydney on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all the things. You really don't want to miss the content. We'll be sharing his book on social. And most important thing, keep having fun and sparkle on. Thank you, Sydney.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Sparkle on, everyone.
Awesome.